This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 4, Episode 50, Series Finale. It's the last in the series before we hunker down for a Christmas break, but before we go, we've got plenty of cricket stuff to talk about. England losing the Ashes, Australia winning them, how to open a cricket academy, and what to do if you come back to cricket after a long break and you find you're not as good as you used to be. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time for the very last in the series of the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. We're going off at the end of this one, but don't worry, we've got plenty for you to think about and do in the meantime, and to help me along with that course of keeping you busy for the next 3 weeks while we're away is, of course, Mark Garraway, Director of Cricket Coaching for Millfield School. Garras, you ready for Christmas?
I'm getting there, I think. I mean, I've been non-stop, so I've been abroad a lot the last couple of weeks. I've been doing loads of stuff with the ECB, so I'm getting into it. So tomorrow's the day where all the Christmas decorations go up, and I think that'll be the day where I'm totally into it, because I do love a bit of Christmas.
Yes, it's been I've noticed, especially with the advent of social media in the last couple of years, I've noticed that putting up Christmas, the tradition of putting up Christmas decorations has changed a lot. It used to be when I was a kid, which I know was a very long time ago. Everything was all fields and black and white. But it used to be you put your Christmas decorations up on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, well, certainly being in Denmark the other week, I realised fairly early in the month that they're very much into it. And there's a long run in, I suppose, for them. And that sort of got me going a bit. And I did a couple of cards and all of that sort of stuff. But yeah, as with you, you know, we used to do it quite late. But I just think that times have changed a bit, and people get a bit competitive, don't they? There's lots of houses with their lights on out the front. And I went past a farm yesterday that had a cricket ball, stumps and a bat up in lights up against a tree, which I thought was quite impressive.
Okay, well, hopefully wherever you're listening to this, you are surrounded by presents and decorations and full of festive cheer. But Garras, it's a time perhaps when people can forget a little bit about cricket, even if you play cricket in a part of the world where there is cricket, then you find yourself stopping everything over the Christmas period. Is there anything that you can do over that period to keep your hand in, or is it just one of those things where let's just all have a great big break and start thinking about it again when we get back to things in the new year?
Well, I think it is a good time to have a bit of a break, because any break can be very beneficial. You know, it's probably a good time for a number of us to get away from actual bats and balls and throwdowns and catches and all of that for a little bit, and then get back into it in the new year with a real verve and a real passion back to push towards a cricket season, or to finish off a cricket season well.
Especially if you're involved in cricket quite a lot, there's definitely a period where you can get a little bit fed up of everything, and you just need that little time away from it to recharge your batteries. It's not that you don't love the game any less, but it just becomes a bit of a grind slightly, doesn't it? And you can just forget about it for a little while, and that always helps.
Yeah, best when fresh is something that Duncan Fletcher always used to talk about. Mm. And he was a big fan of little breaks to reinvigorate your body, and more importantly, probably your mind, actually.
I guess speaking of things like that as well, we are forced, being good Englishmen, forced to congratulate Australia on the Ashes win. Is that because they were fresher than England?
I'm not sure it's just about freshness, though. I think it would be an easy thing to say, I suppose. They've come off the back of a very hard year as well, which included another Ashes series over in the UK. But I've just been really impressed with the way that they've gone about it, and it's almost gone back to old school a little bit for me. You know, they've almost gone back to that McGrath stuff that I used to have to sit and endure when I was doing my job. My job with England, where he would hit length ridiculously high proportion of the time and mix in some pretty hostile stuff along the way. And that's exactly what Harris, who I think is probably the closest, and Siddle, the closest places too that they've got presently have done. And obviously Mitchell Johnson's been allowed to bowl in a very aggressive and attacking way and done really well. So it's been great to watch because it's just been old-fashioned cricket in many ways and really put England under the pump and put the game beyond them, which has been fantastic Test cricket because that's how it should be played.
Yeah, they've taken the idea of doing what you do well and doing it as high a quality as you can do it. They've taken that to the degree, haven't they? They found a something that works for them, and they're doing it absolutely at the top of their game, and that's the difference perhaps between England and Australia.
Yeah, there's loads of things, aren't there? I mean, you know, Kevin Peterson's not scored any runs. Alistair Cook's not really scored any runs, certainly not taken. If you take the best two players or your most experienced players out of the equation from batters.
They haven't really changed their tactics, have they? The England side so much as they just haven't done it as well. They haven't done their thing as well as Australia have done their thing.
Absolutely right. And Andy Flower always talks about skill, and I think that's the element of skill that's come into play is that they haven't, particularly those two, haven't put their games down onto this series in the way that they have in previous Ashes series. And but they've been put under the pump. Australia have really played some good old-fashioned cricket, have gone about it in a very intentful fashion, and England haven't come up trumps.
Now, all this talk about cricket, there'll be people listening to this thinking, that's all very well, Gareth, you saying I'm going to have a break over the Christmas period, but I want to do something, but I can't find anywhere to do anything. I can't play any games, I can't do any practice. What can somebody who is chomping at the bit to get something done over the Christmas break, what advice can you give the keen youngster?
Well, I'd find a brick wall, get a tennis ball or a golf ball, depending on what windows you've got around you, a stump or a little cricket bat, and I'd do what somebody like Don Bradman did many, many moons ago.
Yes.
And chuck the ball up against it and simulate some games. And it's something that, you know, I was very lucky. I had a very nice set of parents who built me an extension with a wall on it that I could throw the ball into. And I could only break windows if I went completely mad, which I did every now and again. But it taught me to play a lot when I was not in any structured practice. And to me, this is a perfect opportunity to do some informal, unstructured practice on your own, which actually will meet your needs probably better than anybody can place around you. So, find a brick wall. Ian Healy used to do it. He used to take a golf ball away with him on tour every series, even into Sri Lanka or Pakistan or India or wherever. And if he was ever stuck, he'd get his golf ball out and he'd chuck it up against the wall and he'd simulate keeping wicket to Shane Warne or a Tim May on scruffy outfields or on scruffy pitches. And do his practice like that. And again, the mind can create so many game situations around yourself that's as good a practice as you can get. So if you can find a wall, you can have a practice.
There's a brilliant video from Google Australia. Have you seen this one with the kid who's using his tablet to find out how to play a bouncer? Have you seen that
right.
one? It's brilliant. He's only a little kid. He's only a little kid. He's, you know, he's probably 12 or 13. And he's playing in a match and he gets a bouncer, he tries to hook it and he gets out and it all, you know, he's all very nervous and everything. And then he uses his Google Nexus 7 tablet. Of course, it's, you know, the Google tablet. And he finds out about Don Bradman, you know, practicing with a stump and a golf ball. And he does lots of other things and he gets an email from his mum saying, yeah, I know you can do it. And it's just, you know, there's probably five or six different things that he does with this tablet that helps him, and then he goes out into the game and next time he gets a short ball, he hooks it for six and everybody cheers, and it's a brilliant effort. It's worth tracking down. It's just a lovely told story about this boy finding out how to practice using his computer, and we have no problem with people finding out how to practice using their computer.
No, exactly right. Oh, brilliant though. I might have to have a look at that this afternoon. Thanks, mate.
Let's finish off this section with the yes, no round. Three questions where Gareth and I can only answer yes or no. So it's going to be down to me to ask the questions. And Gareth, if you're ready, we'll fire away with the first one. First question. Self-awareness is more important than technique.
Yes.
Yes. Second question. Michael Clarke deserves Cricketer of the Year.
Yep.
No. Third question. If a coach ever tells you to slow down and focus on line and length, it's time to find another coach.
No.
Yes. And it's her thanks to our friend Stephen Jones for that last one. Well, let's head into the mailbag. As you already know, Gareth, we have a couple of questions lined up. And the best question, as well as getting the answer to your question, also gets a prize, which is a course, an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy over at pitchvision.com. And you can find out more by going over to pitchvision.com/academy. And you can get in touch with us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com if you want to send in that question. So we've got a couple of interesting questions. I've picked a couple here, Gareth, that are a little bit open-ended to see if we can just have a discussion around the subject. Perhaps the questions are too difficult to answer directly, but maybe we can discuss the subjects within them. So bearing that in mind, the first question is from Imran. And Imran contacted us via Facebook, in fact, which is our facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And his question is short and sweet, but I thought maybe we could discuss some of the things that he brought up in it. And his question is, how can I open a cricket academy? What material and facilities can I provide? So, huge question, but where would someone even start if they're thinking to themselves, you know, I'd like to set up an academy. Where do I even start?
Well, an academy can mean so many different things. If you think about academies like the Australian Cricket Academy or the English Cricket Academy, you're looking at huge building, magnificent facilities, massive amounts of staff, technology coming out of your ears. Or you can look at some of the Indian models, which I think is probably more relevant here, which is effectively an area of ground which is relatively flat that brings interested and potentially talented cricketers together under the auspices and the guide of a mentor. So it can mean huge amounts of things, but I think the first thing that you require is passion. And I've got a feeling you might have that already, bearing in mind that you're asking the question, Imran. So well done on that. You passed the first test in terms of an academy. The second one is to find an area that you could do some practice. And going back, I suppose, to the previous chat that we've just had about what you need to be able to practice, you don't necessarily need a massive amount. And some of the best cricket academies that I've seen in the world in India have got very, very little. But they have got an area that they can play on. The outfields tended to be pretty rough. But what they did do is invest any time, any money and their passion really into developing some surfaces that you could play on, which would be relatively flat, relatively true in terms of the 22 yards. And then get going, really. Get yourself basic amounts of kit. Hopefully the kids will bring some kit with them. And away you are. And you don't really need that much to start it up. As long as you've got that passion and a group of people that you can work with, that's your starting point. Over to you, and then we'll come back to more things in a minute, David.
I think the starting point is where you are now is a really good way to think about it, because that way there's the barrier to beginning is not so high that you think, well, I'm not, you know, I can't even begin to think about something like that. If you have an ambition to build a facility like Cricket South Africa, a building with Pitch Vision built into every lane and state-of-the-art surfaces and state-of-the-art lighting and, you know, a huge building, then that is going to be something that is extremely ambitious, and perhaps you might be capable of doing it if you know, have got the right contacts and you've got enough money, but it's still going to be a huge project which you may not be able to carry through. So start with where you are is a great piece of advice, because, you know, even if you've only got some tennis balls and one cricket bat and 15 keen 12-year-olds, you've got an academy. I mean, I know academy is probably an overused word, but there you go. You've got the foundations there to start something, and you can teach people and you can help them improve and you can help them move on to the next level, and you can find ways to raise more money and do more exciting and interesting things as you grow and develop. You don't have to do it from a expensive foundation. I guess if you're in a country where the weather is a bit more difficult, then you are going to have to find somewhere indoors, aren't you, Gareth?
Yeah, you will do. And the other thing, as well as finding somewhere indoors, is when you are outside in the summer, and we do obviously experience rain at times, is to make sure that you have some resources that can be available to you in terms of educational resources, whether it be video, whether it be field settings on a big piece of paper in the middle of the floor, that, or whatever the case may be, that you can construct some sessions in wet weather. You know, I'm always talking about doing diving sessions outside when it rains, but have a plan of what sort of things you can do when you aren't able to get out on your facility. And it might be one day that you get along to the nets and actually the groundsman's watered the nets at the wrong time or whatever. But you just need to find some alternative things just in case of poor weather or a circumstance comes along that could throw you off track that enables you to work. And I've got a huge bank of resources now that when it does rain, whether it be in cricket matches or within practice, we can still use that time effectively. Because one of the differences between cricket clubs that don't operate brilliantly or academies and cricket clubs that do is that they take full advantage of every minute that you have with these young players, because we get a limited amount of time, and it's massively important that we get that down and done, even in rainy conditions or when things are going against us, that we get something positive to come out of that time together.
Yeah. And then ambition, you know, moving forward, once you've got things up and running, even if it's very basic and it's just cones and balls and bats, you know, you can aim then to go forward and to more advanced things. What type of things would give you a lot of bang for your buck? If you were, you know, once you've got things up and running, you've got the basics there, you've got some sort of a facility that you can use, you've got your basic equipment, you've got your kids coming along. What extra things on top of that, Gareth, would help a coach who's running an academy but wouldn't necessarily he'd get a lot out of it, let's put it that way. What kind of equipment or things like that would he be able to use?
Well, I think, you know, the sky's the limit, really. I think that it's really about growing with your group rather than sort of growing with a massive ambition, because that massive ambition requires huge investment. Whereas when you're growing with a group, generally the money that's coming in or to support you as a business is there to be reinvested. So that's the way that I'd go about it. You know, facility is definitely crucial. And I think the one thing that players will look for as you get bigger and bigger and bigger is the capacity to support better practice, I suppose. And that will mean having better resources for fielding, better resources for nets, better resources for any match play that you want to do. And that will mean probably having to upgrade from the ground that you start on or the area that you start on up into a higher level of cricket. And if you track the development of most academies around the world that have gone from small to quite big over the course of the last 20 years, it's their facilities that have been upgraded rather than the particular kit that they've got alongside. I mean, ultimately, you want to get to somewhere like a national governing body has where they can get things in like pitch vision. But probably in the first few stages of development, you'll go from a piece of land up to a, you know, Premier League cricket club to have to be the host of your programme, because the demands of the group that you're working with are going to grow with you.
And then you'll be looking at some more expensive equipment, things like pitch vision, a bowling machine, a computer for those times, like you said, when it's raining, or you just want to track players' attendance and, you know, data type stuff.
Yeah, definitely. You know, just having an iPad with the option of having a data projector is fantastic. And that's all that we carry around with us now. As long as we've got a connector that goes from the iPad to the data projector, that's fine. You can stick your data projector over your shoulder or keep it in the back of the car for when it rains. And they're coming in quite cheap nowadays in relation to how they were 5 or 6 years ago. And all of a sudden you find a wall in a pavilion or a wall in a sports centre or a wall in anybody's house and you've got a classroom. That's a definite bit of kit that I would always have with me: my iPad, a connector, and my data projector.
You just build from there, really. I mean, a lot of it is personal preference as well for the coach. I mean, obviously, the more stuff you can have, the better. But the only person who can know exactly what that stuff is going to be in the order that you're going to get it, I guess that's up to where you are, who you are, and what your priorities are.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's massively important. We talk about authenticity a lot as coaches. And I think it's important to be authentic as an academy as well. So if your bag and if your skills aren't around technology, then don't just go for it because I say or you say that that's the way you should be operating. It might be a development area for you, but keep with your skills. If your skills are talking tactically about the game, then get some DVDs of matches gone by or record something on your Skybox or something that you can then play back and then talk about what's happening on that pitch get the kids talking about what they would do in the same situation, those sorts of things. You don't necessarily have to be a whiz kid to be able to do that, but keep it authentic. So if you are known as a technician, then that's got to be the mainstay of your academy business. If you're known as an innovator and somebody that looks for the next new thing, kids will probably come to you that are looking for the same thing. So make sure you're authentic, identify your development areas, and then build it from there.
Okay, Imran, let's know how you get on. We'd be fascinated to know more about that. We had to talk pretty generally, unfortunately, because we didn't know any details, but hopefully that'll give you some pointers. Let's go on to the next question. I didn't get the name of this person, so I'm just using the first part of their email address, which is arcsmack, which I don't know if that's rude or not, but it's from arcsmack anyway. And his question is, or her question, I don't know if even if it's a male or a female person, but this person's question is, I played cricket for the first time when I was 13 years old in a summer camp for a month. At the end of the summer camp, my coach told me that I have calibre and talent in the game, but I couldn't continue to play cricket. Now I'm 19. Last week I joined a cricket academy. I batted twice in the nets, and on both occasions I was bowled out three times in around 30 balls. Should I continue to play cricket? I badly need help. Well, there's a lot of desperation in that question, isn't there, Gareth?
There certainly is, but I think anybody who's listening to this show can probably relate to that experience and coming back in. And a few years ago, in between jobs with England and Ireland, I played a year's worth of club cricket. And the first game I played, they decided that I was going to open the batting. I hadn't hit a ball for about 10 years. Oof. And I went into bat, and the first ball I managed to middle to mid off, which I thought, oh, that's quite good. It was a bit of a surprise. And then a few balls later, he dropped one in short on a really slow wicket, and I whacked it through mid on for four, and I thought, this is all right. And then I timed another one. But every time the ball wasn't in the areas where I've always been very good at, I really struggled. And what happens over time, and you've had a bit of time away from playing cricket, is that the area of uncertainty in terms of length in particular becomes wider and wider and wider. So I felt really exposed. I got out for six or something in that game, and I felt pretty embarrassed about it. And I worked very hard for the next few weeks, managed to talk my way down the order a bit and back to a more appropriate position. Batted at five, and I worked my socks off with my dad throwing to me, and his arm must have nearly fallen up, I think. And I slowly built myself up. So I came back into the game and felt like a bit of a novice again. But the worst thing you can do is just say, oh, racketing, cricket's not for me. And I ended up doing all right that year. So I was 36, whereas you're not. You're 19. Mm. So I'd say just keep going with it, and getting bowled three times in the practice is irrelevant, really, if you keep battling away, because the people that keep battling away and keep trying to work it out, and the fact that you want to, you've asked this question, tells me that you want to work it out. Just stick at it. And I'm sure that things will turn around very quickly. And I'm sure that you'll start reconnecting with that talent that your coach identified when you were 13 years old. That's still in there some way. You just need to try and unlock it a little bit. And normally getting in there, getting bowled a few times, learning from those mistakes, because mistakes are huge in the way that we end up developing. You know, if we don't learn from our mistakes, what can we learn from? So away you go. Have another net after that, and I'm sure it'll get easier for you.
Yeah, there's no. I think maybe the writing between the lines on this question is that when I was younger, it felt like I was a natural and it all came to me very easily. And now I've had another go, and it's suddenly not how I remember it. And therefore, am I not a natural at all? And should I go and try and do something else? But I think being a natural is a bit of an overrated concept anyway. I mean, everybody has to work hard to get better. Nobody's born the finished product as a bowler or a batsman or a fielder. Everybody has to work at it. I mean, admittedly, some people find it easier than others. But still, there's going to be a time when you're not so good, and there's going to be a time when if you practice, you improve. And the different types of practice you can do will help you improve more quickly or will help you less. So you have to think about what type of practice that you're doing. But the general principle that if you practice, you get better still applies to the vast majority of people. So then the question becomes, okay, I know that I must have been quite decent at some point, otherwise the coach wouldn't have said to me that I was a good player. I know that perhaps things aren't working in the way that they were before, but I can go away, I can work on it, I can practice, I can improve. I know I can definitely improve, so I can go and do it. So then the question becomes, should I put that time in? And that, I guess, depends on your ambition. If you feel like, well, I'm only going to be happy if I'm opening the batting for India, then, you know, maybe that's an unrealistic aim for you at the moment, and maybe you should rein that back in a little bit. But if you're thinking to yourself, well, I'll just keep trying and see how I get on in the club game, and maybe I can make the next step up, or maybe I'm just happy playing cricket on a weekend or after work, and that'll do me as well. So I guess you have to factor that in as well. But definitely don't take it as, well, I had a couple of bad net sessions, so therefore I should chuck it all in.
No, definitely. And I think one of the crucial things that's come out of this test series, this Ashes test series, is that Michael Clarke was asked, you know, why is it all turned around? And he actually said, well, you know, we've been working really hard, but we were working really, really hard in England as well, you know, back in the English summer. And things just didn't quite click for us. But our work there has underpinned what we're able to do now. So, you know, they were working incredibly hard last summer, and it was evident to everybody who was watching them, and they were getting better. And then all of a sudden the session would come along in their games where they would just lose 6 wickets and the test match was lost. All the momentum that they gained was lost. But if you keep working at it, it will come right. And the Australian cricket team are probably a prime example of that at the moment. They haven't just started working hard at the beginning of the first test match in Brisbane. They've been working really, really hard and really specifically for the previous 8 months. And it was only at Brisbane that it started to bear fruit. So, you know, sometimes development isn't instant. And in fact, most of the time development isn't instant. So stick at it. Give yourself a go and you'll find that you'll be bowled less than the nets in a few months' time, maybe even next week. But stick at it, because the long-term gain is going to be so much more worth it.
I always don't really know how to take that that statement that we've been working hard, because everybody always says it all the time. So it becomes a bit of a nothing statement when you're talking about international cricket. But you've seen it firsthand. Are there times when there are teams that are working harder than other times, and that reflects in the performances on the field?
Yeah, you do see it, and you're absolutely right. The word hard is probably it's so vague, isn't it, that it doesn't really give us
anything. Everyone says it all the time.
Yeah, you know, if they were to say, oh, we've been putting a lot of effort in, well, of course you have. I mean, you know, anybody who plays a game puts effort in. Let alone people at the top end of the game. I think in this case, so let's take the Australian case in point here. What they did was they did a lot of soul searching, and they actually started to look at themselves in a really honest way. And Peter Moores used to talk about it in terms of brutal reality. What is the brutal reality? Because we're really good at, you know, at papering over the cracks and putting some propaganda around things. And you can probably accuse the England team of doing that over the course of the last 5 or 6 months, where they've been, oh, yeah, well, you know, this side's done this and this side's always come through. And that's great. But actually, are they soul searching enough? So when Michael Clarke talks about working hard, I think the start of that working hard process was really going back to what they needed to do, going back to their basics, asking themselves tough questions, because it's easy just to go through the 100% effort of each day without necessarily working on the things that are really going to make the difference in the long term. And that's exactly what this Australian side have done. They asked themselves some proper questions. And then since then, their hard work has been associated with those things they came up with in that meeting. And I should imagine that's pretty much what happened, because that's what happens when Flowers' side in post Jamaica in 2009, because he asked the questions and other people asked the questions, and then the work isn't just hard, it's smart, and it's really answering all the questions that you asked yourself when you're being brutal in your reality check.
And I guess, if that, taking it back to the original question, of course, I guess that's something where it's a little bit early in the process to be doing something like that for Arxmac. That really what he needs to be doing is giving it a little bit more time, being patient, and then as he develops and starts to come on a bit, then he can start to think about the best ways to do things, as well as just doing things, working hard and doing things in the way that that just gets him back into the game and gets him playing again.
He just needs to give himself a bit of time, as you say. Be patient. You know, you've come back in after a period off, and probably out of the two stories that I've told there, the one about myself coming back into the game after 10 years and having to really battle is the more operative one out of the two.
Yeah.
And I should imagine you'll probably make the adjustment quicker than me because you've got age on your side.
So again, ArcSmack, let us know how you get on. Hopefully you don't pack it all in after a couple of bad net sessions. Otherwise, there'd be a lot less people playing cricket if that happened.
So in our special festive edition, we've got a soapbox that's covered in glitter and tinsel, and it's got a star on top, and the star's name is Mr. David Hinchcliffe.
And it's quite the present. We've started a new series on Pitch Vision Academy this week called Streetwise Bowling, and it's the concept behind it is that if you're a bowler, you need a plan. But it's so often, especially amateur levels, bowlers who have plans tend to stick to the idea of let's just hit the top of off stump as often as we can, swing it away, swing it in, or give it a rip if you're bowling spin and cross your fingers. And although that is an excellent plan and it works in a hell of a lot of circumstances, it's not always the right plan all of the time. So when you're talking about having tactics, then you still need to be accurate and you still need to practice these things, but you need to have a range of tactics available to you that you can bring into play, try out and see if it works for you, rather than having to just default to the top of off stump idea and then find out you've got no more ideas after that doesn't work. Someone smashes you over mid wicket and you think, well, that was a bit of a slog, but actually it's the batsman defeating you because you haven't got enough plans. So, that is the end of the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show for this week. And it's the end of the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show for this year and this series as well. 50 shows packed with content to help you become a better coach or a better cricketer. And so we're having that well-deserved break that we were talking about before. Gareth and I will be disappearing off into our families to enjoy our presents and our decorations and eat far too many mince pies, I'm sure, Gareth.
Correct.
But before we go, we've just got a couple of things that we need to sort out to leave you with over the festive period. The first one of which, of course, is the winner of the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. We had Imran's question about opening an academy. We had Arx Mac's question about coming back into the game and the role of talent. Which one did you prefer, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Arx Mac this week. I thought it was a really good example of a real life situation and a struggle and some really good questions that came off of the back of that. So I'm going to go for him this week, and certainly hit my sort of core because I could relate directly into it. So I hope that some of my advice based on my own experience helps, and I'm sure that some of the collective advice and the answer will help as well.
Congratulations to you, ArcSmack. You win the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy. And Gareth, if someone was listening to this show and they wanted to send in their question for the new series in next year, we're still accepting questions all over the Christmas period. Don't worry about that. We've got an answering machine and we have an email that keeps collecting the emails. How would they get in touch with us?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. As I said, it's an answering machine if you want to phone us, and there's also international numbers available on the website. You can keep on tweeting us. Thanks to the power of the internet, we can still access that information all through the festive period at Pitch Vision Acad, or you can head over to the Pitch Vision Academy page on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you liked this show or any of the previous shows and you think to yourself, I want to be the first in the queue for the new series next year, then head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and hit that subscribe button. And while you're there, why not leave us a nice festive review telling us how much you love the show. And if you don't love the show, please don't leave a review, because that's not in the Christmas spirit at all. So that's all for this week, and that's all for this year as well. Have a very, very good Christmas, and we'll see you in 2014. 2014. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, Gareth.
Merry Christmas, everybody.